Hello and welcome to episode 3 of Yes Mother Podcast, a podcast that covers the Bates Motel show on A&E. Today we will be going over episode 3 entitled What's Wrong with Norman?
I can't seem to face up to the facts. I'm tense and nervous and I can't relax. I can't sleep cause my bed's on fire.
Sue.
And I'm Ann.
And welcome back if you're a comeback listener. If not, welcome for the first time.
Hey guys.
All right. So Em.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm a little under the weather, but we'll get through this. But
all right.
I might be a little dumbed down version of myself, if that's possible.
I think we can handle it.
Okay, I've got one of those cold head fog things going on. Brain fogs. They come along with colds and flus.
Yep, it's that time of year.
Yes,
and it's
it
been
is.
So cold, so.
Yes, Utah is a frigid environment.
Yeah, it's been, every morning when I've gone to work, it's been like 8 degrees, so it's been cold. But
yeah.
It's been cold in a lot of places, so we can't. Not just us.
That's right. It's like cold in Texas.
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy. So.
Anyway, I have something to start out with. It's kind of an amends from last week. Last week, we talked about some dude named Herb Alpert that we figured was a 70s one-hit wonder, and...
Well, I did do a caveat. I said maybe he had a lot more hits and I'll get yelled at.
Yes, and so and do you know who's going to yell at us the hardest? Wouldn't be our mom and dad. So, dad, if you're listening to this ever, we are sorry. You don't have to kill us. I'm trying to make up for it. So, I decided this week I just happened to decide to catch up on my Here's the Thing podcast, which is Alec Baldwin's interview podcast.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Which I got into just because he interviewed Tom York once. And the first one I listened to was like from the end of November, and it was this Herb Alpert guy, and the name like rung a bell, and I'm like... Is that the guy Sue and I were just talking about that sang that song? Anyway, yes. And he is the guy he's the guy behind the Tijuana Brass.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
Not only that, but he started A&M Records. He's the A in A&M Records. Started it with Jerry Moss, which is like the world's largest independent record company ever. They signed he discovered the Carpenters, the Police. Sheryl Crow, Janet Jackson, and they sold it in 1996 or something for like $500 million.
Oh my gosh.
And the Tijuana Brass, who I know, all right,
we had
those records growing up as a kid.
Yep.
They had the number one record in 1965 in the country. And then
before we were born.
Yes. And then it was on the charts for 3 years. And so... Alpert had 5 number one hits, 8 Grammys, 14 platinum albums, and 15 gold. So, we would just like to say we know he's not a one-hit wonder. His name just didn't ring a bell.
Well, his name did ring a bell when I saw it. I just didn't do any investigation.
It rang a bell, but it's like nothing I've ever had on my iPod. It's nothing I've ever, you know, his name's nothing I've ever had on anything. Any of my rotation.
I bet you if I went through my LPs right now, I've probably got like 3 of his records.
You know what? I bet I do too, because I've got a bunch of records from mom and dad's album.
I do too.
I don't have that one. So anyway.
Oh, okay. Good to know. Good to know. Sorry, Herb, if
so
you're
we
listening.
If we have any listeners at all, we apologize and trying to make amends there. So, and it was funny that I just happened to.
That's funny. And hey, when something like that happens, we will totally own it. We are not above saying, oops.
And I hope we didn't lose all of our cred. Because we're both pretty knowledgeable about old music and old.
We are. That's what's funny. Is that, yeah, I mean, even the name Larry Moss is familiar to me. Yeah. I wouldn't be able to like place, but when you said the name, I was like, oh, I've heard of him. So. All right. Well, cool. All right. Good to know. Way to go, Herb.
Okay. So.
All right. So, now that that's out of the way, should we go to what we're currently watching? What are you, have you been watching anything good?
Well, I want to say while we were doing this segment last time, kind of came up with an idea, and I kind of edited it all out because it was like coming up with an idea instead of explaining it. So I thought I'll just edit it out and explain it later. Mm-hmm. We decided as part of the segment, and I don't know if you remembered or not, but we decided to kind of put a suggestion to the other one. Like I'd suggest something to Sue and she'd suggest something to me, and then we would like report back.
Right.
So last week, whether I kept any of it in or not, I challenged Sue to watch Girl Walk All Day, and she challenged me to watch Pacific Rim. So I thought I would talk about that. Mm. So I watched it, and I used my birthday Redbox free rental.
Nice.
My birthday was in November, but I still had a little code to use from Redbox, so I got it for free, and...
And?
Anyway, it was fun. It was cool. I mean, as cool as a movie like that's going to be, it's kind of fun to sit back and see giant robots in the ocean.
Exactly.
But, you know, and it for movies like that, I have a really, really, really strong radar for movies with, like, B lines, like bad guy lines and stuff. I just, I don't know.
Right.
Not my thing at all. There was a little of it. But not bad. And I saw that Film Spotting reviewed it, which I haven't been listening to Film Spotting for almost the entire year. I have not been listening to movie podcasts too much. I've had a weird year of TV, heavy TV.
Mm-hmm.
And
Film Spotting is one of those that, like, if I get behind one or two episodes, I'll just let myself get behind like 10.
Yeah. And then I'll just kind of...
And then I'll marathon them.
Yeah, or movies I'm interested in. I usually will always catch up on all of them, but if I get too behind, I'll just, oh, I want to see this movie, I'll listen to it, or I saw this. If I've seen a movie, I really want to read the reviews of the people I like after I've listened. So, anyway, and I haven't been watching many movies, but...
But no, Pacific Rim is fun. I mean...
I loved having Charlie in it. He was a major good addition for me.
Yep. He's got a fun role, and I really liked Ron Perlman. I loved his boots with those gold things on them.
Oh, see, now he was the one just too over the top for me.
See, that's what I liked about him, because that's so Ron Perlman to me.
He's
a very over the top, and you know he was just like doing over the top just to do it. I couldn't stand the relationship with the Asian girl that the other guy had. I didn't enjoy that. I just liked seeing the giant robots fight the giant monsters.
I like that too. I mostly just liked the giant robots.
They were huge, huh?
They were so big.
I love how they could just like plop him in the middle of the ocean.
And, I know.
Like, it still was like, up to their
standing
chest.
In the ocean. Like 10 miles out of coast. Yep.
So, well, good. I'm glad that you watched it. I hope it you didn't like turn it off and want those couple hours back.
No, not at all. It was fun.
Cool. Cool. Well, I did not watch Girl Walk all day. I'm sorry. Well, it's one of those I have to sit in my office and watch it at my computer. And I just haven't been able to do that this week. If it was something I could have put on my TV in the living room, I probably could have watched it.
Yeah, I understand.
So, but I think this week won't be as crazy as last week was for me. So I think I'll have time.
You need an iPad.
I do. I do. I really should have some sort of little device like that. All I have is a PC. I'm lame.
Yeah, a little lame.
But I'm getting Cam an iPod, so we're stepping up.
Well, I guess if you get a iPod with Wi-Fi, which most, I think they all are now.
Right.
You could watch it. It's tiny.
No, I'm not going to do that. No. But now that we've recarpeted the office, I can stand to be in here so I can watch it. That was the other problem. It just, ugh. Hmm. So, anyway, what else have you been watching?
I don't think I saw much of anything to of note, to be honest.
Okay.
I think I caught, I used this week to kind of catch up on just boring things like Grey's Anatomy, and I watched the last two American Horror Stories.
Oh, right on.
And just as my, like, relax, falling asleep, I restarted watching How I Met Your Mother from the beginning on Netflix.
Oh, I didn't know that you liked that show.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen it all.
It's one of the very few half-hour shows that Cam and I try to watch. I always forget, like, what night. I'm really bad at keeping track of what night shows are on, so.
Yeah, I don't either, but.
We mostly catch them, like, in syndication, but.
Yeah, I've got the luxury of the iPads and the laptops and DVRs and things.
Well, I have it on my Netflix list, but I've just never watched it that way. We have a couple channels that show it a couple times a day.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mainly watch it for, I don't know, I like everyone except for the main
Robin?
Guy.
Oh, the main, oh yeah.
Ted. I can't stand that guy.
Yeah, he's okay.
I don't know. He bugs me. But he's, I love like, Jason really Segel. I love Doogie. Neil Patrick Harris. I'm like, what is his name?
Doogie.
Barney. So, okay, cool. Well, I've watched a couple interesting things. Do you want to hear about them?
I do. What did you watch?
I watched Bronson. Have you heard of this?
Bronson. No, is it about Bronson, Missouri?
It's not Branson. It's Bronson. It is a movie that about like England's most famous prisoner, and it's played by Tom Hardy. He goes by Charles Bronson. That's not his real name, but he takes on the name Charles Bronson because he kind of just wants to be famous.
Okay.
And Emily is so good. I think the reason why I watch it, I think Matt Singer talks about it a lot. And I was like, I need to watch this. And
When did it come out? Is it old or new?
No, it's not too old, I don't think. Let's see, 2008. So. Hmm. And it is just so good. It's hard to explain. The way that it's done is really interesting because it's like It's the story of this Charles Bronson in prison, and like sometimes it's Tom Hardy like up on a stage like doing a one-man show explaining about being in prison, and then it like cuts to actual, I mean not actual real footage, but you know, him acting in the prison. So it's kind of like one of those non-linear storytelling devices.
Yeah, cool.
That's done really well. And I'm telling, Tom Hardy is right now my favorite actor because he is so amazing in this. It's just, you have to see it to believe it. He's so good.
Huh.
Do you know who he is?
Yeah. And some, is it Matt Singer that just loves him, talks about him a lot?
Yeah, it seems like.
Someone does.
Someone does. I swear I've heard Matt Singer talk. I think I've heard a few people talk about it. And it just, it's really good. And it's on Netflix. And it's something I put on my queue a few months ago. And then just the other morning, I got up really early and had nothing to do. And I just saw it and went, you know what? I'm going to watch this. And then Cam came out about 10 minutes after it started. And he sat down and we just watched it. And we both just loved it.
Huh.
And yeah, it's just, it's really good. So I recommend it. The other thing that we watched just the other night, which was such a disappointment, was COG. Are you?
COG.
It.
That does not ring any bells.
It just arrived on Netflix, and I was so excited when I saw it because it's a movie based on a David Sedaris short story.
Oh.
I think it's from Naked. But it's, you've read his books, right?
Yeah, but I don't think I've read that one.
It's the one where he like goes and works on that apple orchard.
No.
And then like ends up staying with a guy who, COG stands for, I think, Child of God. He's like a born again, and he makes those clocks out of jade in the shape of Oregon. Did you read the story?
No, this isn't one I've missed.
It's hilarious. So I was so excited because I love David Sedaris. I've seen him twice do readings. I've gone to a play that is based on his short story about being an elf at Macy's, I think, at Christmas time. Cam and I went to that. It was like a one-man show. It wasn't David Sedaris doing it, but it was another actor.
Right.
But it was hilarious. But oh my gosh, this movie is so awful.
Oh, sad. Did he have much to do with it?
It follows the story, but it doesn't. If you just watched it and didn't know the short story, you would probably be like, what am I watching? This is the most boring thing because they didn't. I mean, the thing that's so great about David Sedaris' writing is his voice and his thoughts and the way he describes things.
Right. And in fact, I like to get his audiobooks at the library. That's usually how I hear his books, is because it's always him reading them.
Right. Oh, and he's just got that great voice. I love.
Right. And he reads them so well. So that's usually where I read.
I've got a two of his live readings, and they are so amazing. Oh, he's so funny. But so whoever made this movie chose not to put any of that in. Like, this is one of those movies that would have been done well to have like a voiceover or a narrator.
Right.
Where usually that doesn't work for me unless it's done really well, but this needed it because I remember like certain scenes where I'm like, he says the funniest thing right here, and it's just not showing up on the movie.
Hmm.
You know, so
A Christmas yeah. Story does it well, and that movie would be terrible without it.
Exactly. That's a really good example of it. Yeah, without that narrator, that movie would be like, what am I watching?
You right, know? Yeah.
And so, yeah, I was so disappointed.
That's too bad.
Yeah, because I don't understand why you would adapt a David Sedaris story and not put his thoughts in it, because he's such a good observationalist. I mean, he can describe the most boring thing, just hilarious. The things he notices about people and stuff are just hilarious, and that does not come over at all in this movie. The acting is fine, and it's actually shot really well, so everything about the movie is good, except that it's just missing what made that story brilliant, and that's David Sedaris's thoughts. You know, the way he described the guy he was working for, the way he described going to the double wide trailer and finding that guy's bedroom full of dildos. I mean, it's not in the You know, I mean, you see the dildos, but you don't hear him talk about it. You know, it's just
So in the
like,
movie,
what?
you're just like, okay.
I know, and it was so, I felt so bad because Cam and I watched this on just a couple nights ago, Friday night, and he was just in the mood to watch like a quirky movie. He's like, what's one of those movies you like? You know, because he, and I saw Bernie on the queue, and I knew he hadn't seen Bernie yet. And
Oh,
I love Bernie.
Bernie's great. Cam
Oh,
needs to
I
see
love
that.
it. And I told him, and then I said, well, and then there's this COG, which, you know, I was like, remember David Sedaris? And he's like, oh, yeah, you know. And I was like, so what do you want? Do you want to watch Bernie or do you want to watch COG? And he's like, let's watch COG. And we both were just like silent the whole time. I think we each laughed like maybe twice. And I was like, this is going to be hilarious.
Now you're like, dang it, should have chose Bernie.
So, yeah. Disappointing. And then one last thing that we watched, Emily, Daughter of George. Last Saturday, Cam and I watched the whole Lord of the Rings trilogy extended versions. Oh, I love Middle Earth so much.
Soon
I,
after Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter
we have a little,
war, you could probably call it.
a little
Although,
rivalry going.
it's rivalry. I can't seem to get into Lord of the Rings much, and Sue never read Harry Potter, so we actually challenged each other to read.
A few years ago, we challenged each other to read them because I think all seven Harry Potter books had come out, and I hadn't even read one.
Right.
I remember when you brought that box. I was like, "Oh my gosh."
I'm like, all right, I'll bring the box. You were like, box.
Yeah, Cam and I were just in the mood. Well, especially with The Hobbit that just came out. We're gonna go see it next week. But so yeah, we watched all three extended, and it was so funny because I found like a Bates Motel link in Lord of the Rings.
Do tell.
Well, I decided that, okay, there's these two brothers, Boromir and Faramir. And Boromir is one of the original Fellowship of the Rings guys. He's the one that he gets killed fairly
Like
quickly.
before Bilbo, it's like who forged it kind of guys?
No.
I am talking like I remember everything about it.
No. Boromir is in the Fellowship. The Fellowship is the four
Oh.
hobbits, Gandalf, the dwarf, the
Yeah, okay.
elf. They're going to take.
I learned all about that in the first book.
Right.
That wasn't The Hobbit, which I read first.
Right. This is from. This isn't The Hobbit. This is Fellowship of the Rings, the first movie of the Lord of the Rings trilogy. But Boromir is one of the original 13 that is supposed to go with Frodo to take the ring to Mount Doom. Anyway, he gets killed. And then he's got this brother, Faramir. And their dad is the steward of Gondor, who's that crazy guy who, like, in the Return of the King, like, catches on fire and jumps. Anyway. So. The Steward of Gondor is their dad, and he like, really favors Boromir and, like, hates Faramir. He's so mean to Faramir, he actually tries to burn him alive. And I was like, oh, Boromir is Norman, and Faramir is Dillon, and Norm is Steward of Gondor. Because she's, like, favoring this one over the other when the other is a good guy, too. I mean, Faramir is awesome. I love him. Anyway.
Wow, you just made other Lord of the Rings nerds that enjoy this show. You just made them all so happy.
I hope so. But I gotta tell you, the funniest thing happened. So we watched the first two. I mean, we started them at like 8 o'clock in the morning, you know.
And so the whole day affair?
Yes. And it was on Saturday when it was snowing, and, you know, it's a good thing to do on a snowy day.
Sure.
And so we watched the first two and then decided to take a little bit of a break. So, like, I went grocery shopping. And I swear, these movies put me in, like, a trance. And so I go to the store and I turn the corner to go into, like, one of the aisles. And there's this little old lady who I would say was probably maybe 4'9", 4'10". And I was just like, it's a hobbit. Oh, yep. Man. So, yeah, I was seeing hobbits. Anyway, that's what I've been watching.
I can't imagine Rob sitting down and watching that.
It
blows my mind, the thought.
It's almost, I don't know how long the extended versions are, but
yeah, they're long.
I mean, I would say that all together, it's probably 12 to 14 hours of movies.
Wow, that's even longer than I thought.
I think they're each at,
I was thinking like 9 hours, but
yeah, maybe nine. Maybe you're right. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's probably more like 14.
Well, and then we watched all the behind the scenes. No, just kidding. So, yeah, that's what we've been watching.
Awesome.
So, all right.
If I watched anything else, I've totally forgotten because I, as I said, I'm kind of stupid right now.
Well, that's okay. But I would say that if you want a challenge for me this week,
oh, yeah,
watch Bronson.
Bronson, okay. Yep. I will do it. You are challenged to watch Girl Walk All Day.
I promise I will.
Okay.
Oh, and there's a fair amount of male nudity in Bronson, so just a heads up in case, you know, make sure Scout's in bed or something.
All right.
But it's not gratuitous. It needs to happen type thing.
I'm not worried about nudity ever.
Okay. I didn't think so.
Not hung up on nudity. All right.
All right. Well, should we start with the recap then?
Recap.
All right. So, like I said earlier, this episode is called What's Wrong with Norman? The first scene begins with Dillon having a total Travis Bickle moment from Taxi Driver. He is trying to figure out where to keep his gun and decides to keep it against his back. He walks into the kitchen and sees Norman and Norma sitting at the table having breakfast and says, "Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. Bates." Norma tells him that she needs some help because some new carpet is being delivered and someone needs to be there to sign for it. Dillon says he can't because he has a job. Norma asks, "Doing what?" And Dillon says, "Nothing," and then walks out of the kitchen. I just laughed out loud when he's like, "Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. Bates."
Hey, I did too.
I just love the humor he brings to in those kind of situations.
Yeah, I love it too. I think he just adds a good little, just funny. Next scene. Norman is at his locker at school and Emma walks up to him. Emma says she's terrified the guys with the guns are going to come after them, and she says she feels so guilty she couldn't even sleep. She says she feels guilty because she was only using the let's go look for the dead girl as a way to get him to hang out with her. She says it was totally self-serving and she didn't even believe it was true until she saw the shed, and then she knew it was true. She says the dead girl is calling her from the grave. Norman says they need to forget about it. They need to get to class. She says she can't forget about it. It's all written in the journal. Norman says she should give him back the journal. He says it is pornographic and they are at school. She says most text messages are dirtier than this. He asks why she is so obsessed with it. She says, hey, I found it in your room. Norman says that's supposed to mean I'm obsessed with it. I'm not obsessed with it. That it was in his room doesn't mean anything. It just means I found it and didn't throw it away and put it in between my mattress. Then he says they need to get to class and he walks away.
Yeah, so I totally don't blame Emma for being terrified. I would be terrified.
No, and she looked genuinely super upset.
She did. I would be so scared that those guys were going to come after me somehow.
Yeah, and she was like shedding actual tears. And Norman gets pissed. He gets worked up.
He does. And that's part of my notes. I'm like, why does he get like that upset about it? I mean, is he just generally stressed out because of the whole Keith Summers thing? And so any little thing is kind of, I don't need this, you know?
Yeah. Now, this whole episode, he spent being really worked up and episodic and just not in a good place. And I don't know. I just get the feeling that he's probably been like how he is a lot forever-ish, a long time. But the attack on his mom and the killing and the hiding of the body triggered, you know, I do not believe, well, I guess we, I just, I feel like that was not, it didn't start just with this thing. Like, Norman's problems didn't start, I get that feeling.
Right.
With that episode, but I do think it kind of created a new traumatizing moment, perhaps, that has kind of triggered him to be easily set off at this point.
Right. That's kind of how I was looking at it. It's just, he's just kind of a time bomb.
Yes, and things just keep escalating this episode to pile onto it.
Right, because he's got more than just this journal to deal with, you know.
Yeah.
The journal to him at this point is just like, whatever, you know.
Yeah, he's Emma's got bigger problems.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking too. But he gets, well, we'll see in the next episode. It really kind of...
You mean the next scene?
The next scene, I mean. Yeah, it really kind of pushed him over the edge. I think this little conversation with Emma.
Yeah, but most of his stresses that happen in this episode haven't happened yet, so it is still kind of weird to me that he got so worked up with what she said. It's like none of the belt stuff had happened.
Right, I'm kind of glad that you think so too, because that was kind of my thought. I'm like, why is this upsetting him so much, you know? So.
Yep.
Okay, so the next scene is in Ms. Watson's class, and Norman is sitting at his desk looking pretty dazed, and it shows the journal sitting on his desk, then it shows the school paper, then the journal again, and then just keeps kind of flashing back and forth, and you can hear Ms. Watson kind of from far away asking if he is okay, and you hear a loud heartbeat sound. Norman just kind of looks at her weird, and she asked, what is he doing? She can see he hasn't answered any of the questions. Ms. Watson says, you know this. You answered all these questions before. The heartbeat sound speeds up, and we start to see flashes of Ms. Watson tied up. And she tells Norman he is burning up, and then he faints and falls over.
Yeah, this was interesting. I thought the tied up Mrs. Watson came out of nowhere.
Why is he picturing her tied up?
Yeah, really weird.
I mean, is it... I don't understand it.
Yeah, we don't have a good handle on Norman's brain.
We don't.
Especially at this point. whether that he just has a violent nature to him associated with sex, and if he like finds her physically attractive. And so, for whatever reason.
That might be it. I mean, he calls the journal pornographic, which I thought was kind of an interesting word to use.
Right.
And so maybe.
Especially if we've seen all of it.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? They're not that racy. They're not like. They really aren't.
No, I would call it more like disturbing than pornographic.
Exactly, yeah.
And so maybe, yeah, I think this must be just like, maybe Norman's brain is just in a weird place, and Ms. Watson is showing not really affection for him, but I don't know. Maybe he just has a problem with women who pay any attention to him.
Yeah, but the girls his age don't seem to do that very much.
But Emma does, and he just got really mad at her.
Well, yeah, but I don't know. He's got a history, you know, and I'm looking at it from the movie Psycho, of sex and violence. You know, sex leading to violence, all of that.
Right.
Triggering violence in his mind.
Right. So, I don't know. I think I'll go with your theory then, that maybe he finds Miss Watson attractive. Because she is.
Right. She is, and she's older. So, I don't know.
So, maybe that's the trigger, and that's why he's picturing her tied up. But I did think it was kind of weird that he pictured her that way.
Yeah, it was tied up, and it wasn't necessarily steamy tied up, but...
No, because she was fully dressed.
Yeah, and it was kind of hogtied. Was that?
It was kind of hogtied, exactly. Yeah, she kind of had it, like her arms and legs like tied together behind her.
Right. And, so maybe that was just violence, but I don't know.
I don't know. But yeah. So Norman passes out. I mean, I think he must have been like knowing this little episode was coming on and was like trying to stop it. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird. We've never seen him actually faint. It was a weird thing. And I'd like to give some credit to all of how that scene went down. I thought his fainting was really believable and messy.
Oh yeah, he knocks over Miss Watson, he knocks over his desk.
And his leg gets all tied up in the
Yeah.
It seemed really genuine. Like, that's actually what it would look like. I've seen people faint before, and it's not usually like in a movie where it's like, ah. You know, it was a very believable faint.
I fainted once and knocked over a bucket of fish on top of me.
Live fish?
No. I've never told you this story.
I don't think so.
I was really young. It was when we lived in San Diego. So, I mean, I was like 7, maybe, and recently seen Jaws. And Dad took me deep sea fishing with Mr. Willardson. He was a neighbor of ours. And we were on this boat, and I was just terrified. And Dad kept telling me, it's going to be okay. Everything's fine. That was just a movie, you know? And then, like, all of a sudden, probably like 20 feet from our boat, a fin comes up.
Oh, no. And you like fainted from fright?
I fainted. And knocked over the bucket that was our bait. And I woke up and there's just like all these little fish on top of me. And Dad's like, Sue, are you okay? You know? And Dad later admitted to me that he got kind of scared too, because the fin like swam towards the boat and went under it, and it ended up being like a porpoise.
Oh. But you, that's funny.
I thought I told you that before.
No, never heard that. I have a fainting story too, but it's not near as funny at all.
Stupid Jaws.
This was when Eleanor was just like 6 months old. And she had woken up like 3 or 4 times all morning, and for some reason I was just exhausted, and I can have low blood pressure problems.
Mm-hmm.
My blood pressure's fairly low. And so with lack of sleep, it was just weird. I remember standing over her for the last time and starting to pick her up, and then the next thing I know, I wake up to Elle crying and Rob and Scout running into the room.
Oh, weird.
I had dropped her. She thought she was fine.
Oh, my gosh.
But I dropped her on the floor, and the crib was, like, pulled out, like I had grabbed onto it. Like, dropped Eleanor and grabbed onto the crib and, like, pulled it out from the wall.
How scary.
It was so scary, and it was so sad. I felt so bad.
Aww.
And I guess it was really loud, because Rob and Scout come pounding in at the same time.
Oh. Oh, wow. You never told me that.
Yeah, I don't think I told anyone.
Our secret fainting stories.
I don't know. It never happened again. I was totally exhausted, and I think it was due to low blood pressure.
Yeah, that's wow. That's the only time I fainted, and it was pure fear.
So funny. You had the vapors. Next scene, Norman is in the hospital, and Norma is asking the doctor what they are testing for. The doctor says this kind of blackout can be due to a number of things. He wants to do a full workup, CAT scans, MRI, etc. He asks if Norman has a history of blackouts, and Norma says, "Why would you ask me that?" Classic Norma. He says he is trying to establish a history. It's standard procedure. Norma tells him Norman has never blacked out before. Lie!
I know. It's just so funny when Norma's like, "Why would you ask me that?"
It's like, he's your doctor trying to figure out.
Seems like a pretty standard question.
If you didn't ask, I'd be super worried about the doctor you have examining your son.
Well, yeah, exactly. And
I know she doesn't want anyone to know about his blackouts and stuff, though. But she just gets all cross-examining again or whatever.
She does. She just, yeah. She's so defensive. And I don't know. Wouldn't you want to know what's wrong with your son?
Yeah.
I don't know.
She's probably worried that what's wrong with him will put him in a mental institution. But, I mean, we don't know what eventually goes down, but it's probably to her detriment that she doesn't have him checked out.
That's true. I didn't think of that. So, yeah, it was just pretty quick scene, so.
So the next scene, Dylan and Weepy, who we find out is named Ethan. I still like Weepy.
We can call him Weepy.
Are driving. They drive into the woods and park and camouflage the truck and start walking. Dylan asks, "Is this where they filmed Deliverance?" Ethan says, "What's that?" Dylan says, "A movie, you know. Boy, you got a pretty mouth." Ethan says, "What kind of movies do you watch?" Dylan says, "The kind where bad things happen to people in the middle of the woods." Ethan says, "Relax, we're here," and it shows the pot field. Then we hear a gun engage and someone yell, "Get on the ground." Dylan fumbles for his gun and the guy that yelled that starts to laugh and says they are just messing with him. And then says Dylan should keep his gun up front for quick draw. I thought he was pretty quick with him in the back.
I kind of thought so. I mean, he kind of fumbled, but he did get it quick.
Him and another guy leave, and Dylan asks what they do now. Ethan says we chill and can even sleep if we want, as long as we do it in shifts. There's $5 million worth of weed in these fields, and someone needs to guard it. Dylan says, $300 a day just to hang out? Ethan says, that's right.
Yeah,
but they don't get to smoke it, but they do get to drink as many beers as they want.
Right. Yes. Alcohol and guns, always a good mix. So yeah, the whole Deliverance part of the front, just, I loved it. He's like, "Boy, you got a pretty mouth."
Ethan is like, just the worst audience. Like, talking about movies you watch.
Oh, man.
Who doesn't get a Deliverance reference?
I know. That's, even if you haven't seen the movie, right.
you know.
Squeal like a pig, "Boy, you got a pretty mouth." And it's just funny. I have another quick little story from my childhood is watching this movie with mom and dad. We were at that first house in Mapleton that we built, so I had to have been like 9, 8 or 9, maybe 10. And mom, I was watching this with mom and dad for some reason. And when it came to that part, I remember mom covered my eyes, but I could hear everything. And just my little 9 or 10 year old brain was just like, what is going on? <You know? laughs>
Funny that like, you just fast forward.
Exactly. Instead, mom covered my eyes and I could hear the whole thing. And at that point, I still had like a very innocent brain. It okay. did not even know how to
process
the fact that this might be like some man like raping another man. I didn't even know that existed.
I can't even imagine what your little 9 year old brain thought. And stuff.
Finally, when I was like 17 or 18, I saw it at like the movie store and I'm like, I'm renting this. I'm like, what happened? And then when I watched it, I was like, all right, I understand why mom did that.
I don't understand why she didn't just fast forward.
But yeah, it confused me, and I was very curious for many years.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Now it's one of my, I love that movie. I own
Good
it.
Good movie.
Oh, yeah, it's great. But, so yeah, just a quick, we know that they get paid $300 a day. That's not bad.
No.
So.
Just to hang out.
Just to hang out. Yep. Okay, so the next scene, Norman is in the hospital and he's playing with the buttons of the monitor he's hooked up to. Norman says it's not a toy and then holds his hand and they're watching an old movie. Norman gets a phone call and it's the carpet guys. They're at the motel. Norman says she's not there and can't be there. Norman tells her to go. He will be fine. Norman tells the carpet guys she'll be there in 10 minutes and tells Norman she loves him and leaves. And then we see Bradley pass Norma in the hall, and then she walks into Norman's room carrying a plant. She tells him she is sorry they didn't get to talk when he came to the hospital to see her. He says it's no big deal. She says it is because no one else came, and she tells Norman he is brave. She tells him her father is in a medically induced coma, and they don't think he is going to make it. Then she asks Norma about his dad, and he tells her he passed away in a garage accident. Bradley says the other kids just don't know what it's like. She asks if she can stay for a bit. Norman says yes, he's just watching an old movie. She asks if he likes old movies, and he says he does. Everyone seems better in old movies, even in the bad ones. Bradley tells him to scooch over and climbs in bed with him. Then Bradley just says she just wants to be happy.
Yeah, I think Bradley really starts feeling connected to Norman here.
Definitely, especially when she finds out that Norman's dad's gone.
Yeah, that would
be... She knows that her dad isn't going to make it.
Right, and she seems to get that. And yeah. And I would just think in that situation at that age, especially finding someone that's been through that would be very comforting. And
oh, sure, because, yeah, that's... Not a very common thing for kids their age to lose a parent, I don't think.
No.
I'm sure
it's not. Man, I could not tell what that old movie was. I watched it, that little thing, 3 times. At first I thought it was Philadelphia Story because of the pool.
Mm-hmm.
But it was not, definitely not Philadelphia Story. And hopefully this isn't another one of those things. It's like the most famous old movie ever.
Well, I tried not. To find out, too.
I did, too. I even looked it up.
I was hoping there was, like, a website that someone's doing of... Because I would think that each old movie that they show him watching is something specifically picked.
Right.
So...
Yeah, I really wanted to figure it out.
So if anyone knows, let us know.
Yeah, and they're, you know, IMBD often puts pop culture references, and but there's just nothing on there. And there's not a lot on the show. I don't know, it's just not getting the love that I guess I would expect it to, but
maybe season two.
Yeah, things will start getting filled in.
One season, that's, you know.
Yeah, that's true. There's
and the people who love it, love it.
That's true. Yeah, that they are. There's a Bates Motel wiki, and I looked on that, and they don't even have it. But if I ever figure it out, I'm going to put it on the wiki. I'm going to edit it.
Oh, good thinking. Because you would think someone knows.
Yeah.
Because they showed a fair amount of the movie.
Kinda. They did. I kind of recognized the male actor, but I'm not quite sure who it was.
Well, for a second, the first time I saw it, I was like, is that Anthony Perkins?
Well, that'd be weird.
Like, how cool would that be? That'd be...
Speaking of him, do you wonder if his line about old movies and everyone seems better in old movies, do you think that was a bit of a reference to Psycho at all?
I thought of that maybe it was. Like, maybe they have Norman watching old movies because Psycho is an old movie.
Yeah, I read today, and I did not get much out of it because of my brain today, but someone that reviewed this movie felt like it was doing quite a big homage to Alfred Hitchcock movies.
Mm.
Something to do with identities, you know, how they're always mixed up. Is there a lot of identity mix up in this? Not really. Not in this episode, but someone felt this episode in particular was kind of a homage to Alfred Hitchcock movies in general.
Really?
Yeah, I wish I was at full brain capacity, but I'll have to read that article again in a few days.
Well, I'll have to read it. I don't know. I'm in pretty much full brain capacity. I've had a pretty good relaxing weekend and I'm not sick. And
I'll go through my history and I will send you the link to that article.
Yeah, because I'm fairly familiar with most Hitchcock movies, and I don't know. I don't. Maybe if I think about it, I'll see it, but I don't see it. But I don't know. Did you think it was kind of weird that Bradley got right in bed with him? there was a second bed just right there.
She might have just craved the close company of someone. Maybe she just needs somebody, you know, that vulnerable feeling when your dad's about to die.
True. Okay. I just thought it was weird. I'm just, I don't know. I'm a space person. I'd be like, get off my bed.
I don't think Norman minded one bit.
I don't think so. So, okay.
If you were a strapping 17-year-old boy and it was like the cutest girl in school, would you be like that?
No. I don't think it was weird that Norman liked it. I just thought it was, I don't know. It just seemed kind of, I don't know. I was like, there's another bed, and then there's a chair right next to him, and you've got a boyfriend.
Yeah, that's true. She does.
But, oh well.
She was just feeling especially close to Norman just then. And
I think you're right.
She liked that, just comfort.
Yep.
And old movies are comforting.
Oh, they totally are. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so next scene. Norma is at home talking to the carpet guys. We hear a knock at the door, and the door opens, and someone yells, police. Norma sees a bunch of policemen coming into her house with Sheriff Romero, and he tells her he has a warrant to search the house. Would they just crash in there when she's gone? They would they?
I think so. Yeah, if you've got a warrant, it doesn't matter if the...
So she just happened to be home?
Yeah, because a lot of times when they have a warrant, the suspect's already in jail.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So, yeah, really nothing to go over that scene. They're searching the house.
So then Norma drives back to the hospital, and Norman is talking to the doctor, and the doctor says the test came back negative. He says he'd like to keep Norman overnight for observation. Norma says, but you said everything was okay, and the doctor says, I said the tests were negative. We still don't know why this happened. The doctor leaves, and Norma says, get your stuff, we're leaving, and starts unhooking the monitors Norman is hooked up to. A nurse walks in and says she can't do that. Norma says the doctor said he's fine and we're going home. The nurse says only the doctor can check him out. Norma says, I'm his mother and I am checking him out. Then we see Norma pushing Norman in a wheelchair down the hospital hallway, and she tells him that Romero showed up at the house with a search warrant. She says that they were still there when she left, so she has no idea if they found anything. Norman asks if they found anything, and Norma says, I just told you, I don't know. She says there's nothing to find, right? So how could they find anything? Norman says, yes, of course. Norma says they scrubbed every inch of the floor, so they couldn't have found anything. Norma says, you didn't see them take anything out? Norma says, why do you keep asking me that? There's nothing to take out, right? Norman says, right, Mom, nothing. Then he looks really worried. So is this like a, I don't know, it sounds like someone that had a concussion that keeps asking the same question over and over.
Kind of.
OCD-ish. I don't know.
Kind of. I mean, you could totally blame his line of questioning on the blackout episode, but we know what he's worried about.
Right.
And that's why he keeps, I think that's why he keeps asking. He just wants to.
He's really, you know, the belt. Yeah.
Yeah, he's really worried about the belt. And at this point, you know, the first time you're watching it, you have no idea what he's talking about.
Right, that's right.
So you kind of...
You've seen the belt, but you
You've seen the belt, but I never put it together at this point.
No, I didn't either.
You know?
Some people might have, but...
Well, I mean, the belt... It was just a belt the first time. It's a quick flash that you see it in the other episode, and it's not like it has a... belt buckle that says Keith Summers on it.
Right.
You don't know it's his. I mean, right. I guess a very astute watcher might, you
There's
know.
There's always somebody on the internet.
There's always someone that's
figured
like,
it
ah,
out.
You. So,
that is rarely me.
It's never me. But, so yeah, I mean, you just know that Norman is just panicking inside about something. He.
Right. I forget right now that when you see that, you have no idea he's talking about belt, or most of the audience has no idea.
Right. So I guess you could see it as that first time viewer as, well, yeah, he must have hit his head when he fell, or he just keeps asking her because of the blackout. So that's pretty good, like, positioning. That was a good job on the writer's part.
Right. So they've called it a blackout, and they've also called it fainting. Because if they're just calling it fainting and it was just like a fainting episode, you'd think that if they did some tests and he's fine, they would just be like, well, okay, let's see if this happens again.
Right.
And she told him he had no history of it.
Right. Right.
I don't know. I guess if they're... Maybe Miss Watson's account of it, him obviously being, like, in a weird state for a few minutes before it happened, raises more concern than just a kid fainting in class.
Right, because I would imagine that an ambulance was probably called,
I guess.
And the paramedics probably did ask, because she did say, man, you're burning up, Norman.
That's right.
Right before he fainted, so... Yeah, so interesting. So, anyway, Norman is worried about the cops being there.
And right, he should be, boy. And they're, you know, if they're searching the house, he's got to believe they found the belt. And
well, that's just a really stupid place to hide it.
It was, and it's, you know, it's huge incriminating evidence. Huge.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. I know, because part of me was like, could they pull it off as, well, we bought the house with all of his furnishings in it, so the belt just happened to be under the bed. We had nothing to do with, you know.
Right, I didn't think of that.
You know
Although,
what I mean?
Maybe, you know, he probably lost the house for a few months, and they knew that he had had the belt. Romero is Romero. His friend.
Right.
He probably knew that. I don't know. That was. It looked like a belt. He's got his little flashlight and stuff. It looks like something he probably wore every day of his life.
Yeah, true. True. So. Okay, well, in the next scene, they come home, and Norman just immediately runs up to his room. Norma yells after him, and he says he needs to change and rest.
I need to rest. He's like, looking at
He looks under his bed and nothing is there, and he looks like he's about to cry, and then he sits up and just says a few times, "What is wrong with me?" And this scene just made me sad. I felt so sorry for him.
Yeah, it was a sad little scene.
It kind of was, because, I mean,
like him realizing this isn't normal behavior, and he just really screwed his mom up.
Yeah, exactly.
Incriminated her, because it's gone, and it looks, it's just like he had this little moment, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he says, "What's wrong with me?" like 3 or 4 times, and he's just kind of crying a little bit and kind of hitting himself in the leg. And
yeah, he just, it's, he's having a little moment knowing that
he's something not is normal. Wrong with him, and yeah. It's beyond, like, maybe beyond his control. That's got to be so scary to, like, realize something like that.
Yeah.
You know and what I mean?
Does he know he has periods where he blacks out and loses memory? I think he does.
Well, there's a scene coming up that it's pointed out to him, and, you know, we'll get to it.
But yeah, he seemed fairly clueless about it.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, how sad to, like, if you do have those episodes and you're like, why would I do that? Because it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Keeping the belt makes absolutely no sense.
No, it's serial killery, you know?
It is. It's very trophy-keeping, you know, which my understanding is that a lot of serial killers do that kind of thing. They keep some sort of trophy or, you definitely. Know. So
that's definitely a theme.
Yeah.
But he's not the one that killed her. Him.
Exactly.
Which makes it a little strange.
Yeah, right. Which to me is just like Norma and Norman's mind connecting. Maybe he feels like he is the one that killed her.
Yeah. Because, you know, there is some.
Well, in the movie, he dresses as her and talks like her.
And he fully believes when he walks into that shower and sees her dead, he fully believes it was his mom that did it.
It was his mother that did it. Exactly.
Oh, that's interesting, because it was his mother that did it this one time.
Yep. Hmm.
Huh. That whole murder thing, probably, you know, we might see that that had a lot to do to shape him into who he becomes, you know? It might have been more of a
true because
big it, episode in his life than we might think.
Well, and it involved a sexual assault.
Yeah.
So, sex and murder.
Interesting.
Become, like, hand-in-hand with him, maybe, because of this.
And it would make sense that they did it in the pilot, because it's, like, just the beginning, you know?
Right. Right, exactly. Like, let's not waste time, you know, Norman as a normal kid. Let's start.
Yeah, let's start this.
Let's start the effed up part. So after this, the next scene is Norman comes down the stairs and pauses at the bottom for a few seconds, and he looks really worried. Norma is in the kitchen making dinner, and Norman walks in and tells her that he kept Keith's belt. She asks him why and kind of starts panicking. She asks him where it is, and he says he doesn't know. He left it under his bed, and now it's gone. She says maybe he put it somewhere else, and he says, no, I hid it under my bed. She asks him why he would do that. Why would he want to keep that thing? And he says he doesn't know. Norman says, well, if the police had found it, they would have said something by now. Then she says she'll be right back, and she leaves. So
I don't know if they would have said something by now. They seem to, I don't know, cops in general, they seem to kind of, okay, we've got one shot at this. Let's gather all our evidence.
Oh, I think definitely they wouldn't have said anything by then, because that would be like, okay, this is the smoking gun.
Right.
Let's connect all the little things because we got this, you know?
Yep.
So.
She's wrong.
She's wrong. I think she was just trying to rationalize or justify or.
She was panicking and maybe she was just panicking. calming herself down.
Calming herself, exactly.
Yeah.
I was actually kind of impressed with his honesty with her in telling her about this.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I mean.
And she looked so happy and that turkey pot pie looked so yummy.
I know. I know.
Isn't that when you have bad news for someone and you see a little scene like that and you're like, I don't want to ruin this.
Exactly.
Your life is so happy and that dinner is so nice.
Later. But I was quite impressed with that because I think he could have really just not told her. And I wonder how it would have played out. I don't know.
Yeah, you're right.
So it just, that shows what kind of relationship they have is he just doesn't keep anything from her.
Yeah.
Anyway, that, you know, not much to say about that one.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. And then we're back to the pot field and Dylan asks, so can we watch it and smoke it? And Ethan weepy says, not on the job. And Dylan asks how this is even possible. Don't the police in town get suspicious?
The people in town.
What did I say, police? Okay, don't the people in town get suspicious? Ethan says it's what is keeping the town alive, and Dylan asks who owns the field. Ethan says a couple of families in town own it, and Dylan asks who is in charge of these families, and Ethan says he asks a lot of questions. Dylan says he doesn't want to wind up like the guy whose warehouse got burned down, and Ethan says that was Gary, his boss. He pissed someone off, so they sent him a message. Dylan says that's a hell of a message. Ethan says not to worry about it. They got it. An eye for an eye. There's that term again.
Yeah.
And Dylan says, you mean that guy hanging from yardarm? And Ethan nods and says everything should settle back now and offers Dylan a beer. They hear a noise in the woods and grab their shotguns and see a pheasant fly off. Dylan asks Ethan if he's ever hunted a pheasant before and they walk off.
Yeah, so just kind of an exposition scene.
Yeah, we kind of hear about the burning guy that left the last episode. You know, it's how we left the last episode.
Right, and we know for sure that that was done because of the boss, which we kind of knew that was pretty obvious anyway. But, you know, we find out that the townspeople basically know about the pot field and that a couple of families actually own it. So that's interesting.
Yeah, like the kind of implying that most of the town's in on it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I got. You know, that's why I corrected you when you said, don't the police get suspicious? Because right. It's like, no, it's the people, you know, they know about it. And what I found a little bit interesting is that Ethan answers all of his questions until Dylan says, well, who's in charge of those families, you know, who own the pot field? And we never find out. I mean, who do you think is in charge of those people who own the pot field? Do you think maybe Romero is in on it? Or...
Yeah, you kind of wonder if something big like that's going on.
Or some, like, maybe the mayor of the town is one of, you know what I mean? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, we get the drift last time that the police were kind of in on the eye for an eye thing, and that they supported the burning of the body.
Right.
And so they must know why. So Therefore, they must be involved somehow.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
It's like a town that got together after, what they say, the tree huggers made logging obsolete.
Right. So, they got together
and said, they came up
with
something else.
Well, how can we make money then? And, I don't know. It's kind of interesting, I thought.
Yeah.
So, anyway, the next scene, Emma is walking up to the Bates house. I just love how, like, her oxygen tank is, like, bumping up every step, like, boom, boom.
Yeah, I noticed that, too. I thought that was just very specifically done for whatever reason.
The camera, like, focused in on it, and I just, It just cracked me up.
And they just, like, made it as clunky as possible.
As clunky as possible, like, it's just a part of her. She just doesn't care. I don't know. I thought it was funny.
I think they're also kind of... slating these two girls against each other in a way. I don't know, kind of showing Emma's the clunky one and Bradley is, you know, slinks in with a plant and gets in bed with him. And
yeah, okay.
I think the show's doing kind of a dual girl
Right.
However you want to put that.
One's a blonde, one's a brunette.
Yeah.
But, okay, so anyway.
Just have totally different feels to them.
They do, actually. They really do. So Emma walks up to the house and knocks. Norman answers the door, and Emma says they need to talk. Norman says his mom isn't home and he doesn't feel good, and he tries to close the door, and Emma blocks it with her oxygen tank.
He really forcibly really tries to shut the door right in her face.
He really did.
It was kind of super rude.
Good thing she had that oxygen tank.
Yep.
But Emma says that she knows he passed out. She says, I never feel good, but life keeps moving on. Emma says the girl was real, and if they forget about her, then the world will forget about her. It will be like her life never mattered. Norman lets her in after that, and then it cuts to them sitting at the kitchen table looking at the journal. Emma points out that the number 4 is in it and says it's in there twice, and it is the only English in the journal. Everything else is in Chinese. The girl must have seen it somewhere. Norman says he found the journal in room number 4 at the motel. And then it cuts to Emma and Norman in the motel room, and he shows her where he found the journal. Emma says the girls must have been brought to the motel, and then men came to try them out. Norman asked who she thinks brought them there, and she says it must have been Keith Summers. He was disturbing, not someone you want to be stuck in an elevator with. Emma says some of the pictures look like sketches of the bathroom sink. And then Norman gets a text from Bradley and smiles. Emma looks at him and then walks over to the sink. She looks under it and finds some Chinese writing. Emma says she was here. She was real.
Yeah, this is like the Scooby-Doo-ish portion of the episode. Or Nancy Drew, something like that.
You know, yes. Yes.
Not to put it down, really, but it's
a little Scooby-Doo-ish, I would say. I would say the one kind of thing that stood out to me was how Emma mentions what a disturbing guy that Keith Summers was. So even this 17-year-old girl that's only lived there for a couple years knew he was a bad guy. So, I mean, I know it's a small town, but you and I grew up in a small town.
Mm-hmm.
And you still don't know everybody.
Sure. But he owned this house and hotel.
Yeah, but how would Emma have ever come across him?
Yeah, I have no idea.
You know, I mean, what I'm thinking is that this is just another way to show what a bad guy Keith Summers was and how everyone just didn't like him. And
okay, I get you.
It makes it even more frustrating that Norma has hidden this murder of him, because even the 17-year-old girl knows who he is, and no one would have missed this guy, you know?
Right, and everyone would have believed that he came in and raped her.
Exactly. Everyone would have believed her. So, I don't know.
Probably not the first person he raped.
Yep. I mean, to me, yeah, it was just even more proof that, you know, he was such a bad guy, because it's just like, how would this little girl had really known who this guy is? You know, I don't know.
Yeah, and this scene, the beginning of Emma, when he tries to shut the door in her face and stuff, you just love Emma again so much. She's just so like, you know what, get over it. Yeah, you fainted. I don't feel good. Move on.
I'm sick all the time.
I like her pluck.
I do too. So yeah, they find some Chinese writing under the sink, so they know the girl that's in the journal was in that room. Was that Lola?
Yeah, she's been drinking water, and then she came in here and shook, and then walked out. Thanks, Lola.
I know that sound.
You and I both have giant dogs.
Yes, Lola's... Emily has a Great Dane, and I've got an English Mastiff. And then our sister has a Newfoundland.
That's right. No Chihuahuas in this family.
No Chihuahuas here. If it's not 100 pounds, it's crap.
That's funny. We all have like the 3 giant breeds.
I know. We have like 3. And then my sister-in-law has a Bernese Mountain Dog.
I don't even know what that is.
It's kind of a cousin of the St. Bernard. It's the white, black, and tan St. Bernard looking dog.
Oh, and we like an English sheepdog and
yeah.
All right.
An Irish wolfhound.
Matt and B need to get one of those.
Matt and B will be the ones that get like a teacup poodle.
Yes. And all of our dogs will eat it.
Okay.
So then Norma is driving and passes a parked sheriff's truck. She turns around and parks next to it and sees that it's Deputy Shelby. She gets in the truck. He asks if she's okay, and she says she doesn't know him very well, but he seems like a nice person, and she really needs a friend right now. She asks him why Romero is harassing her. She's trying to start a new life, and all her money is wrapped up in the motel and house, and now she's facing a lot of medical bills. She tells him Norman had been in the hospital. He asks if Norman is okay, and she says he is. She says it's irritating that she can't have the cops coming in and out of her home over nothing. She says it's not like they found anything. Deputy Shelby looks... Can't even get through that with a straight face.
I know.
Looks like he wants to tell her something and then says, I'm on duty, Norma, but we should talk later. She says, talk about what? He says,
what?
What on earth? He says he will tell her later over dinner. She should come to his place around 8 and he will make her dinner. She says, okay, I'll see you then, and gets out of the truck. Shelby tells her not to worry. Everything is going to be okay, and she smiles at him and leaves. My first, when she walked into the truck, I was struck by how much he looks like Dylan.
He does look like him. I agree.
Just crazy. They really looked alike in this scene.
Well, they do. In fact, did you, because this guy who plays Shelby is on a different show now. Did you ever watch Under the Dome?
No, I didn't.
He's one of the main characters in that show. And like the first episode, I was like, I kept thinking it was Dylan from Bates Motel. I was like, why is he in this show too?
Now, wasn't that a miniseries or was it a full on show?
There's going to be a second season.
Oh.
Yeah, they had a full, I don't know, probably 9, maybe 10 episodes or so. So, yeah, but...
I heard it wasn't great.
No, it's not.
But I just heard from one source, so you never know.
No, for some reason, I watched them all just because I was curious, and it's not great, but I'll probably watch the second season just to see what happens.
Yeah, I started the book, actually. It's a Stephen King book, and I think I got, like, the first 100 pages for free on my Kindle for whatever reason, some sort of promotion to get people into it or get people into watching the show, and I watched those, and it was okay enough. It's, you know, some Stephen Kings are mediocre, and some are pretty good.
I haven't read a lot of his newer stuff. I don't know. He was just so good in, like, the 80s and early 90s, you know?
Yeah.
And then just a couple I read, I was like, eh, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah, they're kind of fun to just, I just want a brain candy book.
Oh, sure. Yeah, if you want to just blow through a book just to read and not have to think. He's good. I mean, I like his writing. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying I think he hit his peak about 20 years ago or more.
Yeah, I agree. And I am probably fairly weird where I cannot stand a bad movie. Like, unless they're really bad and, like, it's Matt and I watching it for fun. I can't
right.
stand a bad movie, but I'm really forgiving. For books, I can read some bad crap and enjoy it.
And they take so much longer than a movie.
I know. But I will so invest in a bad book way, way more than a 2-hour movie. It's a very weird facet of my personality. But that's...
I will invest 20 hours
in this slog crap. Yeah. I am, and I don't, it seems like in books I can, like, make it better in my head. And I'm just way more forgiving than seeing an actor actually say a bad line out loud. I can just,
okay, I see that.
I never said that.
You're constantly rewriting the book as you're reading
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. I totally do. And I just make it fit.
But that's true. If there's bad acting, you just can't get over it.
I can't. get over
nope.
it. Nope,
I can't either.
Headlines and, yeah. Yep. I'm really sensitive to movies and picky, but.
Yeah, I agree.
Books, give it to me, I'll read it. Anyway, sorry. Okay. Back to the show. Oh, so I was thinking that Norma was just really laying it on thick, and it was really obvious and painful to watch.
She was trying to put a guilt trip on Shelby.
Yes.
You know, like, oh, these bills and my money, and now Norman's in the hospital. Did I tell you Norman's in the hospital?
Yeah. I mean, she was just fishing and lying, and you know he know. Well, it was my second time around, so I knew he knew. But, goodness gracious, she was just doing her Norma thing.
She was. And he seems like a pretty good... he can deflect it pretty well.
Yeah. No, he did not play into it at all. It was pretty mm-hmm. fun to watch on his yep. end. Painful yep. on one hand, just hearing her even act that way.
But, oh, I know. And Vera Farmiga is just so good at the looks that she can give people. Like, she's a very expression actor. You know what I mean? Like, she can say a lot in just a... Because she does a lot of, like...
A look and a sigh and a...
Yeah, looks and sighs.
Hand to the face.
Mm-hmm. Yep, she's really good at that.
And yeah, it looks really true to life and everything.
Yep. So... I don't know. I think even my first viewing of this, I think I knew that Shelby had the belt.
Yeah, no, I did too. Especially after and his everything is going to be okay at the end. That was basically,
yeah,
I've got it under control. I know about everything and I'm going to hide it for you.
Yep.
I got all that from that the first time.
Same.
For whatever, he was going to be on her side and hide evidence and all of that.
Yeah, still, for whatever reason, I just I don't understand it. I mean, I do, but I don't.
Yeah.
But, okay. So, next, we see Norman is sitting outside on the stairs of the house, and Norma walks up. He asks her where she is going, and she says she's going to go in and put on her face. She is going to have dinner with Shelby. Norman asks why, and Norma says because he knows about the belt, and she goes inside.
And here again, she just totally manipulates him. It's like, woe is me. I've got to go put on my face, and I've got to go romance this guy because of you.
Do women even say that anymore? I've got to go put on my face.
Did she mean literal makeup, or did she mean just, like, transform into the flirty woman?
I think she meant literal makeup. That's...
Oh, really?
I've heard that saying before.
Oh, I have too, but you know, I don't know.
It's, yeah, I think very she literally old-fashioned meant term. Makeup.
That's funny. Just maybe yep. another little nod to the timelessness that they're trying to portray in this show.
That's exactly what I was thinking, because, like, I don't think it's someone from, like, our generation or younger generations would say. I think that's something from, like, our parents and beyond, you know?
Yeah, even, like, our parents.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Mom may have said something similar, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't picture that.
True.
Well, maybe ask her.
So, yeah, just a quick little scene. But so the next scene is Norma arrives at Shelby's house, and she looks beautiful. She put on the face.
She did. And the dress.
And the dress. And he lets her in and gets her a drink, and they sit down. And Norma asks him, so what's the deal? I'm worried. What's going on? Shelby says, why don't we start with you telling me about the belt? And Norman says, what belt?
Good grief.
Valerie says, don't do that. If we are going to help each other, we have to be honest about everything. The only thing that matters to me is honesty. So please tell me, why did your son have Keith's belt under his bed? Norma kind of starts crying and says, that Romero has it out for me. And Shelby says, Romero never saw the belt. I found it. I took it. So no one else knows. Norma says, thank you. Shelby tells her that Keith was a bully and had a hell of a temper. And he says he noticed she has quite a temper herself. She laughs and says, I suppose. Then Shelby notices a scar on her thigh and asked where she got it. And she said it was a childhood accident. He says, Norma, did your son kill Keith? And she says, no, of course not, no. He asks if there's anything else she would like to say. She says, what could I possibly say? And he says, I know you have spent your life taking care of other people, but you are making their problems yours. You are carrying a weight. You're wearing it like it's an honor, but the truth of it is hanging you down. Just like Frodo Baggins taking that room to Mount Doom. Wait, I added that. He would have said that if I was a writer in that room. He says, I'm going to change that. I'm going to take care of you, Norma Bates. So don't you worry. Everything is going to be fine. He tells her she is so beautiful it makes his heart hurt, and they start kissing. So, yeah, Shelby finds the belt and doesn't tell anyone, and that's just so illegal.
Oh, yeah. Not that this town or police department seems to care. But.
I guess not. It just, that's such a huge piece of evidence, and it's just his whole, I'm going to take care of you, and I don't know.
You're so beautiful, it makes my heart hurt. That's what you say when they're like, you've been married for 20 years.
Maybe not.
I don't know.
I'm just kidding.
No, but no one needs to say that. But
it's just, I don't know. It seems so, is manipulative the word?
Of him?
Yeah.
What part? The whole thing?
Yeah, just the whole, I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to change. Oh. These two barely know each other.
I think in that last part where he's doing that, Like I said, it makes my heart hurt. That's not something you, like, one of your first lines you tell a pretty woman you want to get with. It's a little familiar. It's
right.
That shouldn't make your heart hurt. It never should. But you know what I mean? In the way that a sappy person would say that.
Right. And, I mean, before this, they've basically had a cup of coffee together.
Yeah, so I play this off as a manipulation on his part and kind of just his, that must be how he makes his moves. Like,
true,
this,
yeah.
Let me,
maybe that's
lay your burdens on me, you know.
Right. Frodo Baggins. Maybe that is his move. You're right, you know. Maybe that's his game. Maybe it works.
Yeah.
I don't know. I would probably have gone running out of the house.
Yeah.
Well, no.
And I wonder what she thought, because she doesn't seem to be someone that would want to relinquish any of her burdens onto anyone else.
Right. But
she has her secrets, and she will keep them to herself.
But he has the belt, so he has
the belt, so she needs to play her.
She needs to play.
To play him, I mean.
She needs to. And she needs to play his game.
Yeah.
He's got the upper hand.
And she makes that pretty clear when she gets home, too.
That's true. Yeah. Okay. So.
But I can't believe she tries to, like, pull one over on him when he even mentions the belt. Good grief.
What
she
belt?
Does not give up.
I know. Yeah. She's interesting. I think she's a very strong woman, and I just think she's just used to being in charge.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, and so now she's finding herself in this position of she's not in charge, you know. I like it. I like where it's going. I like what it does.
So now we're back with Dylan and Weepy again. This time they're sitting around a fire, and Ethan asks Dylan where he learned to hunt. And Dylan says South Dakota. He lived there, and there wasn't much to do on the weekends besides hunt. Ethan asks if his whole family moved from South Dakota, and Dylan tells him no, his mom and brother moved from Arizona. And Ethan asks Dylan where his folks are from, and Dylan says his dad grew up in Kansas, but he doesn't talk to him anymore. He says he honestly doesn't know where his mom is from. She's talked about Missouri and told him some stories about Colorado. Ethan says, you don't know where your mom is from? Then Ethan says, you have a brother, right? And Dylan says, yeah, a half-brother. Ethan asks if they are close, and Dylan says, not really. Ethan gets a look on his face like maybe he should stop asking questions, and the scene ends. So this is the first time I feel like anything real happened between Dylan and Weepy worth really even talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's another little bit of just an exposition scene, but
But I think we can pull some good stuff out of it.
I think so too.
I think it kind of turns, for whatever reason, it seems to turn Dylan around.
I did, my notes, I'm looking at them right now, is I think Dylan has a bit of an epiphany.
Yes.
Like, I think he realizes, I think especially about Norman.
Especially about Norman, but also a little side of it is, I think, was very strange that it was like the first time he realized, that's weird, I don't know where mom's from.
Right, because it took, like, someone else to point that out, because Ethan kind of laughed. He's like, you don't know where your mom's from, you know?
But you could tell that hit him, but, you know, the biggest takeaway is that he seems to kind of turn himself around about Norman.
Right, like, that's what I got out. That it just seems to Dylan that this is where he realizes maybe he should be looking out for Norman a little bit more. Like, maybe he hasn't been the best older brother.
Yeah, he's asked if they're close, and it's like something about saying not really, and then Ethan's look, he's like, whoa.
Well, yeah, and Dylan's look back at him, because, you know, after Ethan asked that question, Ethan got a look over his face like, I should stop asking this line of questions, you know. It's not making him happier. I don't know. It was interesting. I liked it.
Most people, you can just ask those kinds of questions. It's like, oh, yeah, my mom's from blah, blah, blah. And then, yeah, my brother and I are close. You know,
that's
what you'd normally expect. And I don't think he got what he expected. And I think Dylan realized that that's probably not normal or what Ethan would expect. And kind of shifts. I think we see a little shift in Dylan at this point.
I think we do. I think we definitely do. Because probably what was going on in his mind is, I mean, he's been making fun of, you know, Norman calling him, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Bates. And then the episode before, he was like, don't you two get sick of each other? Mm-hmm. You know, in a way, he's been kind of letting this happen too.
Yeah. And I think he looked at it from a jealous sibling point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he started thinking, this isn't fair for Norman. You know,
exactly.
He's a kid here, and I'm an older brother. I could do something about it.
Exactly.
And he knows something's a little off about him, as we figured out in the last episode. You know, the meat cleaver thing.
Well, and we find out more in the next episode, too, what Dylan finds out, I think. So.
The next episode or scene?
Or, I'm sorry, the next scene.
Yeah.
So, in the next scene, Norman is in the living room alone watching an old movie.
Did you recognize this one? It looked a little more Western.
I didn't, and I love the old Westerns, but I did not recognize
this. Yeah, that's why I kind of depended on you, because I don't watch old Westerns.
Nope, I do, but yeah, I didn't recognize this one. It's probably like a really famous one. People are like, you're an idiot. You didn't know who Herb Alpert was.
We're just two people here, people, and one is giving us feedback.
I'll throw out this little caveat. If it's not a Clint Eastwood old Western, I'm probably not that familiar with it.
And if it's a Western, I probably have not seen it. But if it's an old, if it's a rom-com, I probably have.
Yeah, where I wouldn't. So, yeah. So, all right. So he's, Norman's watching an old movie. Dylan comes home and Norman hears the door and goes, "Mother?" Just the way he says it just made me laugh. Dylan says, "No, it's just me." Dylan walks over to him, grabs the remote, sits next to Norman, and turns off the TV. He says to Norman, "Can I give you some advice? You've got to cut that shit out." "Mother, it's just weird." Norman says, "It's just a habit. I guess calling your mom a whore is perfectly normal." Dylan sees the hospital bracelet on Norman and asks if he had been in the hospital. Norman tries to take the bracelet off, and Dylan gets out his pocket knife and cuts it off. Norman says, "Thanks." Dylan says, "You're welcome." Dylan asks why mom isn't home taking care of him. Norman tells him she's out, but she should have been home hours ago. She hasn't answered any of his calls or texts, and he's getting really worried. It's not like her to answer, to not answer. Norman says, "I tried to go to bed, but, you know, what am I supposed to do?" It's like, just go to bed. Dylan says, "You need to get out more, Norman. What she's doing is not healthy. She's smothering you. There is a whole world out there. You need some perspective." Norman just kind of looks at him, then looks down. Dylan says, "Sorry you tried to kill me the other night." Norman says, "I hardly think I tried to kill you." Dylan says, "You came at me with a meat tenderizer." And Norman says, "Oh, I did?" And kind of laughs. Then Dylan laughs and says, "You were pretty badass." Norman says, "I'm sure I struck fear in your heart." And they both laugh. Dylan says, "Our family is so screwed up." And Norman says, "I guess we are. Well, I'm sorry I tried to kill you, according to you, anyway." Dylan says, "It's cool," and gets up and leaves. So this is my favorite scene of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And number one, Norman is totally wearing grandpa pajamas.
Oh my gosh, I didn't notice.
They're like these brown, I don't know. I just loved it.
Oh, I'm going to have to see it again.
It just makes me laugh. He's just such an old man for a 17-year-old. I mean.
Yeah.
But I would have to say that, what's the actor's name? Is it Max Thoreau?
Yeah, Max.
His acting in this scene was great. You need to go back and watch it if you didn't notice it. But after he tells Norman that he came at him with a meat tenderizer and Norman says, "Oh, I did?" and kind of laughs, the look that Dylan gives him, it's a split second, but it says so much. Like, okay, it's like a look of surprise or concern. It's just such a great look. It says so much. It's like right in that second is to me when Dylan realizes Norman is more messed up than I've ever thought. Like the fact that Norman doesn't remember coming after him with a meat tenderizer just seems to totally blow Dylan away.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to rewatch that. And then he says, "You were pretty badass," just kind of like a cool older brother blowing it off to not worry him. Almost.
Exactly. Because, I mean, I really do think that in that split second, Dylan went, "Holy crap, he doesn't remember that," you know? Because obviously, from what Norman says, you know, Norman before says, "Well, I hardly think I tried to kill you." So Norman remembers a little bit about that fight.
Yeah, I was thinking about it today while I watched it, and I thought, I think he remembers everything up until where he spends all that time against the refrigerator.
Right.
And I think from there on, he only just wakes up with the black eye on his bed.
Yes, I agree. Because we kind of talked about it last time, you know, when he's up against that refrigerator, like a whole
something switches.
Look comes over his face.
Mm-hmm.
And it went from conscious to unconscious or something.
And he obviously remembers some of the fight.
Right.
You know, it's like he did. It's not like he blocked the whole thing out.
Right. Because even Norman says, "I hardly think I tried to kill you." So all Norman remembers is like maybe punching him.
Right.
And so he doesn't remember anything about the meat tenderizer. And go back and just watch that little part. I'm telling you, the look that Dylan gives Norman is just, I was like, he's the most amazing.
I was stuck on Norman's reaction. Oh, I did? And then kind of laughing. It was a really weird to me. It kind of spoke to me like this was not the first time he's been told something that he did that he has no idea he did.
Exactly. I agree.
It looked like someone who was kind of has experience playing something like that off, like, oh, yeah,
that's what I do.
Yeah, because no, someone, if it was like me and you, and you said that to me, you know, there'd be a lot more questions and a lot more disbelief and all of that going
totally,
on.
Totally, totally. Yeah, so, and I really think it's this little conversation where Dylan, I think Ethan's question started his brain kind of rolling, and then he has this conversation with Norman, and I really think that Dylan realizes during this conversation, like, he is way more messed up than I ever thought he was.
Yeah, so. And I guess it'd be getting to spoilers, you know, what happens next, and, you know, the rest of the season with
right.
those two.
Right. So. Right.
Yeah, it's the beginning of something different. And I don't remember if there are any more moments. Kind of makes me want to watch the next episode.
I know.
I don't remember exactly all of their moments from now on, if they ever has any more little, like, Mr. and Mrs. Bates, and, you know.
I think he does, but I think he tones it down a little bit. I think he, yeah, I'm pretty sure he does, but I don't think it's as common, or I don't know. We'll have to see. So yeah, this was my favorite scene of the episode. And you've got to just watch it just to see the grandpa Dunglass that Norman's wearing.
Totally going to.
They're like these brown, they're hilarious. It just cracks me up because I would just think a teenage boy. Okay, I can see a teenage boy like maybe wearing the pajama bottoms and then a t-shirt, but not like the top of the pajamas all buttoned up with the collar down. I don't know.
Yeah, and I just heard Jerry Seinfeld's routine about how men's pajamas are like little shirts with the pocket and the collar. And how I think he says something about them being like the most ridiculous.
I haven't heard that. But yeah, they kind of are.
Yeah.
So yeah, anyway, good scene.
Oh, and if you ever hear Sue or I say Dunglies, that's his pajamas.
Yes, that is our, it's another word that's
in the lexicon.
In the lexicon of the Wright family. Emily's daughter, Scout, came up with it, when she was like two?
Two, barely two, maybe even earlier.
She started calling pajamas dunglies.
We had no idea what she was talking about for like a week. She has a penchant for like, not remember, or especially earlier on. She still does it. But early in the day, back in the day, I should say, she would, like, know that there was kind of a longer word, and she would just decide, like, pajama's a good instance. Dungly. Just remember it wrong, and then just use it with no fear.
Yep.
And not even ask me, and it took a little while, and then we just thought that was, like, the most fantastic made-up word ever.
It's the best.
It's the best word. And so,
it's the best. I almost have a hard time saying pajamas. Dungly is almost more natural to me.
It is. It's absolutely more natural to me. And I have to fight when I'm not talking to someone in my family to
or
say
like you
pajama.
Go to
and pajama. Yeah, pajama feels weird.
Do you have any
Cookie
Monster Dunglies? I can get my niece.
Pajama feels weird going, you know, on my tongue.
Yep. Dungly flows.
Dungly flows.
So
anyway.
Anyway. That's Bip and Dungly. You're keeping track.
Okay. Norma comes home and the TV is still on and she turns it off. Then we see her walking into Norma's bedroom. He's asleep on top of his bed with the lights on. You know what? He is on top of her bed.
Oh, is he in her room?
Did you not notice that? He's in her room.
I did not notice that.
And she's just, she kind of like, that's why she looked more tired. She's like, get out of my bed. I want to go to sleep.
Oh, okay. okay.
Because she has to wake him up. I don't think she would have otherwise, but he's in her bed, and so she's had that long day.
Yeah, I didn't even put that together.
And then she comes home, and she has to wake him up to get him out of there, because she wants to go to bed. Anyway.
Okay.
He's asleep on top of her bed with the lights on, and Norman touches his shoulder and says, Norman. He says, Mother?
Just like he did before. Mother?
She tells him he needs not mother.
Everybody goes, Dylan.
That just reminded me of Rupert the Monkey Boy.
Oh, yeah.
not mother. Norman touches his shoulder and says, Norman, and he says, Mother, and she tells him he needs to go to bed. She says, everything's okay for now. He says, what does that mean, for now? She tells him that Zach has the belt, and he hid it, and it seems like he wants to help them. Norman says, seems to want to help us? Norma says she's exhausted, and she wouldn't have believed it if someone told her everything that she was going to go through that day. She's right.
Mm-hmm.
The son in the hospital, all that happened that day. Man, that's a long day.
The carpet guys. I mean,
police coming in, finding out about this belt. And she even made that beautiful turkey pot pie. Sorry, I can't get over the beautiful turkey pot pie. It was so nice. She says, all I can tell you is I feel fairly safe, so don't worry. Norman says, what does this mean? I want to know. I've been waiting all night. And Norma says, what can I say? It is what it is. Deputy Shelby has the belt, and he is going to protect us. Norma says it's a bad idea letting him use her. Norma says she is not going to have this discussion with him. Norman says, what if he wants more? What if he makes you do things you don't want to do? Norma says, well, what do you want me to say? Then she asks Norman why he kept the belt. She says she doesn't understand, but she wants to. He says, oh, my iPad just... Sorry. I didn't touch it for so long, it blacked out. Okay.
Oh.
She says she doesn't understand, but she wants to. He says, I just like to keep mementos. You know all that stuff I have in my room? She says, those were good experiences, and this was not a good experience. It was horrible, it was violent. I was sexually assaulted, and I killed a man. Why would you want to keep a memento of that? He tells her he's sorry, and she hugs him and kisses him on the neck and tells him not to worry. She is there for him no matter what.
I think Norman has a really good point about how Shelby is now able to use Norma.
Yeah. Kind of saying what we were saying earlier.
Yeah.
Got the upper hand.
Yeah.
Especially if she's going this route where she is obviously going to do whatever he wants.
Exactly. And I don't get, like, the jealous boyfriend vibe in Norman like we have in other scenes.
No, I don't either.
I get more of like a really concerned son. Like,
he smothers her a little bit.
He does, but he makes a good point. He's like, what if he makes you do things that you don't want to do? You know, I mean, that's like a scary thing to think about when it comes to your mom, I would think. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know.
And for yourself, you know, she's in a really bad position.
She is.
And it is his fault.
It is.
Oh, anyway. She could have called the police about the body. You're going to bring that up again? Don't hide the body.
Don't hide the body. And don't hide it with a 17-year-old.
Yeah.
They're not old enough. But yeah, and just his keeping the belt as a memento is just creepy.
Yeah, like they mentioned, you know, mementos from the beach. That's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
The belt from a rape murder scene. Quite another.
It's another. Yeah. I mean, and she's right. Why would you want to keep a memento of that? You know?
Yeah.
That, so. And then I noticed, and this is just a dumb little thing, but I think it has to do with like the atmosphere they're trying to do. But the TV, when it's on, when she walks in, is doing that white noise, like that snow. Do TVs even do that anymore?
Well, that was an old TV.
Yeah, true. I haven't seen that in so long.
Yeah, they go blue now.
Right, yeah.
But, and all our TVs go blue, and then after 5 minutes or something, they just automatically shut off. But that was old. In fact, it felt like she felt it to see if it was warm. It was a really old TV.
Yeah.
Like, 70s old. It was a brown. It wasn't even like the 80s where they started looking more electronic.
Right.
But
yeah, because it was like, yeah. And then she kisses him on the neck again.
Yeah, another neck kiss I got. I noticed.
So the next scene, Norman is at school and he sees Bradley at her locker. He walks up to her and says hi and asks why she's at school. And she says her mom said it would be good for her to have some normalcy, as if that's possible. But she says she is happy to see him. And then Emma walks up and asks Norma if he could talk to, if she could talk to him for a minute. He says yeah and walks up to her. Emma tells her she posted a photo of the Chinese writing from under the sink on Yahoo Answers, and it means beautiful. Norma says that's really sad. Emma tells him she is going to go to the police after school and tell them about the journal he found. Norman says, do not do that. Emma says, why? Norma says he does not want to get messed up with the police, and he can't explain it to her. He tells her maybe she is right. Maybe this girl is real, but finding out what happened to this girl isn't going to make a difference to anyone. She's still going to be dead, and you're still going to be sick, and I'm still going to be who I am. Emma is just kind of staring off while Norman is telling her this. Then Norman says he is sorry. He just can't do this right now, and walks off. So again, Norman just goes off on Emma.
Yeah, really bad.
He gets really mad at her in this. I mean,
like, maybe as upset as I've seen him to date.
As the what?
As I've seen him to date.
I agree. He gets more upset than their first conversation before he fainted.
Yeah.
I mean, he just really... Yeah, he just goes off. I mean, I can understand him wanting to avoid the police just because of the whole Keith Summers position, you know, that whole situation going on. But he's got nothing to do with that journal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he found it, so I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird, and I couldn't, on another note, I couldn't help noticing how frumpy Emma looked next to Bradley. And I think they dressed her particularly frumpy. Because she shared a scene with Bradley. I just think they're doing something like that. And I just noticed it again.
I did notice in the scene that Bradley's hair looked great. And I remember thinking, man, she... I don't know.
Emma just... She had on an ugly sweater, and I don't remember it specifically. I just remember thinking, ugh. She normally looks really cute, but... I just feel like they dressed her particularly frumpy.
They probably are. I think you're right. I think they are kind of, you know, making these girls out to be, you know, the opposite.
Yeah, and I feel like it has something to do with the way Norm, maybe on some level, the way Norman treats her. I don't know. Do you think Bradley had anything? I know most of it is because he's panicking about the police.
I think I don't quite understand why this upsets him so much, because like I said, he really has nothing to do with this journal. He found it in the motel room. You know, why he would be implicated at all with this journal is impossible, almost. I just think it just must come down to he's dealing with this belt thing and the Keith Summers thing, and he just can't have any more on his plate.
Yeah.
He's already blacked out at school in public. I think he's just trying to lay low.
Yeah. He's scared. He's had a, you know, it's scary for him. And more police involvement is scary to him.
Yeah.
That's just a lot of fear.
But one thing that just kind of, like, crossed my mind, and I could be, like, totally going way over the top, but do you think, because you keep mentioning, you know, comparing, like, Emma and Bradley. Do you think that's how Norman is perceiving them?
Oh, like a trick of perspective?
Yeah.
Could be.
You know, just like he sees Bradley as maybe she's not as beautiful, but we're just seeing her through Norman's eyes or something.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
That's something.
Yeah. Not much. It just hit my brain about a second ago. So, but I did find it interesting when he does say, when he's like, she's still going to be dead, you're still going to be sick, and I'm still going to be who I am.
Yeah. That seemed unnecessary.
Yeah, because does he know who he is? I mean, I don't know. I found that kind of interesting.
The hiding the belt, keeping the belt, and learning about the meat tenderizer might be getting to him more than...
There's that.
I don't know, maybe more than we know.
Yeah, this is probably the next day from the talk with Dylan where he's like, I attacked my brother with a meat tenderizer and I don't even remember.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be terrified if someone, you know.
Oh, yeah. That's really scary.
That is really scary. That's like, I don't know. Ugh, that just gives me the creeps. Anyway,
it's okay. So, more scary stuff here. Norman's lying on top of his bed. Car lights come through his window and then disappear, and Norman's room is dark. So, I took this as a lot of time passed while he sat there laying on top of his bed with his eyes open.
I did, too.
Was that like the sun setting? Going from day to night?
No, I think you actually hear a car.
Oh, so it was just a car?
I think it was just a car.
Oh, I thought it was like camera speed up. Showing, like, hours of him just laying there.
Ooh, I don't know. I might have to watch it, but I thought you could distinctly, like, hear a car pull up.
Huh, I'll have to watch that again, too.
Hmm. I'll have to watch it with your perspective.
Yeah, it looked to me, and I don't know, maybe I've seen, what's that, scary movie too many times? Paranormal Activity.
Oh, yeah. No, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. And yeah, that didn't even cross my mind, but
I thought it was going from day to night, and he just laid there still the whole time with his eyes open. I don't know. Maybe I'm totally off. It made it creepier. It made this scene creepier to me.
That totally makes it creepier. I mean, he definitely is. He's lying on his bed, just kind of weird. He's kind of stiff.
Would there be any reason for us to pay particular attention to a car? No.
Just as soon as from what I thought might be car headlights, like you hear footsteps, like maybe Norma comes home.
Oh. Totally watching that again.
I am too.
So, okay. You hear footsteps and then see Norma sit down on his bed and she says, "You're right. As long as Shelby has that belt, he can control us and make us do things we don't want to do, just like your father did." Norman says, "We can't let that happen, not again." Norma looks at him and says, "This is all your fault." He says, "I know, Mother. There is something wrong with me." She says, "You know what you have to do, don't you?" Then the camera moves angles and we see that Norma is alone in his bed. And he says, "I've got to get that belt." Then the camera changes angles again and we see Norma sitting on the bed with him and she nods. The camera moves again and Norma is alone on the bed. It cuts to Norman walking and the Bates Motel sign is behind him. A motorcycle passes him, and then it cuts across the street from Shelby's house. Norman walks across the street toward the house and walks through the front gate and onto the front lawn.
Yeah, creepy.
Yes, that's super creepy.
Norman totally hallucinates that entire conversation with his mom.
Yeah, and he...
Or imagines it. I don't know, hallucinate, imagine, whatever.
Yeah, he's having a conversation with his mom, and she tells him that he needs to do something, and that's all coming from his own head.
Yep.
And it seems to imply that he is not answering back in his mom's voice at this point.
No.
Like, he's just imagining her say it, and then he answers.
Right.
I think they kind of made that as clear as they could.
I think so, but it also, it just made me think about the movie. So
where he does do his, her voice. Like
he does do her voice, but is it say, I mean, can we assume that the Norman Bates in the movie actually does see his mom like this? Do you know what I mean? I mean, before...
I would guess, I don't know, because then he dresses up as her, actually.
That's true. Because, yeah, I mean, before this TV show, I always thought the Norman Bates in the movie was just really messed up and had these, like, imaginary conversations with his mom. But in this, it is a real conversation he has with her.
Uh-huh.
He pictures it. She's there.
And she gives him a command, and he follows it.
Yes. Yeah. This scene was... Bleh. And, man, Norma... Just the way she looks at him and she's like, this is all your fault. I mean, she just looks so angry. And
it's not how she is to him.
No, not at
you
all.
You know, that we've seen. She is so, like, pandering to him.
Even in the scene where she's making the pot pie that you love so much, when he tells her, you know, that he had kept Keith's belt, she still didn't look at him like that. She was still just like... Okay, we're going to deal with this, you know?
Exactly. So he imagines all this disapproval. And
yes, exactly.
Very strange. Something to watch for and note.
It is strange, and it's interesting just how she says that we can't let, you know, Shelby control us and make us do things that we don't want to, just like your father did. So what did the father make them do?
Dylan was our first person to say something like that, you know, like insurance. If you told him what it was really like living with him.
Yeah. And I have to think that they are going to show us.
Yeah, I think
I don't think they would make two references now. Plus her. Yeah. We're going to find out, I think.
Yep.
So, okay. So the next scene, Norman is on the side of that house and he tries to lift like this big wooden planter that's on top of a metal barrel and he knocks them both over. Really noisy.
This guy cannot sneak.
He's the worst.
He's the worst sneaker ever.
He sets the barrel back up and climbs on it. Then we see him from inside the house and he opens the window and crawls inside. And he starts going through cupboards and drawers. He comes across a locked door and tries to open it. The door has a lock, a deadbolt, and the doorknob is locked. I mean, this is a locked door.
Yep.
He goes upstairs and looks through more cupboards and drawers and then goes into a bedroom and looks around and finds a set of keys in the bedside table. Suddenly, there's a dog in the doorway growling at him. The dog comes at Norman. Norman is able to fend him off with a baseball bat and gets out of the room and locks the dog inside. He goes downstairs and finds the key that unlocks the door and goes down to the basement. He turns on a light switch and sees a bed in the corner with a disco ball above it.
So weird.
He finds another door that is locked from the outside. He opens that door and turns on the light and those fluorescent lights flicker on and he sees the girl lying on the ground. He walks up to her and kind of shakes her shoulder and asks if she is okay. She's so out of it. She slowly wakes up and sees Norman. She grabs his arm and says, help me. And then it cuts to the outside of the house and Deputy Shelby pulls up and walks in the front door. And that is the end of the episode.
For a policeman's dog, that dog sucks.
Dude, that is the worst guard dog ever.
Where was that dog when he was like banging? I mean...
When he knocked that barrel over.
Yeah. Now, I have a dog that's not like a yappy dog that, like.
Right.
She will be at attention the second someone walks past our house, though.
Exactly.
And she doesn't react to everybody, but some certain person just walking past our house, she will go nuts. But it just seems
really?
Like, yeah. Like, I don't know. She's got a sixth sense doggy thing. She just doesn't like the looks of that person. But. And she's got loud barks, and she'll usually just do one. I mean, I feel very safe having two little girls at our home and this dog. And the dog sleeps in with the younger one, Eleanor. They share a room.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know, I feel very safe going to bed at night, because there's nobody that would come in and get away with it. But this dog, like, shows up, like, 10 minutes after Norman's been very noisy and coming in through a window.
That dog should have heard him come through the front yard.
Yeah.
And especially when he knocked the barrel over and opened the window and crawled inside. I mean,
yeah, that dog sucks.
Yeah. That's a piece of crap dog. Cause I mean, Bunny, I'll be home with Bunny. And yes, my English Mastiff is named Bunny.
And for reasons you may not know.
Yeah.
I mean, you may not suspect.
But like, I'll be home with him if Cam's gone. Bunny can hear Cam. He can hear our garage door open.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, he'll be sound asleep on the couch, like hanging out with me, and he'll hear the garage door open, which he can barely hear from inside the house, and he knows that Dad's home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and he jumps up and, like, runs to the door to greet Dad.
Yeah, that's a dog, especially since Dylan is obviously coming home soon.
Shelby.
Yeah, Shelby. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, I mean,
they look so much alike.
I know. But yeah, worst watchdog ever. And what is up with the disco ball?
The disco ball is the craziest. I mean, okay.
It is.
We are surprised that the sex slave girl is Shelby's house, but the disco ball? I've got to see the scene. I mean, I know I don't want it. To.
I just love it so much that he has a disco ball. I mean, does that make it sexy, Shelby?
Oh, it's just, you need to know. These are things you need to know, but you probably don't want to know, but you need to know.
Oh, it makes me laugh so hard because it's just so, it's a disco ball. Really? Oh, it's such a great touch. It's just like one of my favorite prop pieces I've ever seen in a TV show. I just love that touch.
Yeah, that's
it. Just makes me laugh. But that's the end of this episode. Yeah, I mean, it just, not much to say about the girl. I mean, she was pretty out of it. You can kind of see her just, like, slowly come out of it and focus on Norman and, oh, this isn't the disco ball guy.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy she's there. I mean, I didn't suspect that.
No, my first viewing, absolutely not. Absolutely not. But
that's an exciting spin.
It is. It is. It's very exciting.
And it adds a little more danger scary element to the position Norman's in. You know, this guy isn't above keeping a sex slave in his basement.
Well, and the scene ends with Shelby coming home.
Sure. Yeah. Then we have that.
Yeah. But it also just starts the viewer going, okay, so Shelby's got this woman in her basement, in his basement, and a disco ball.
Yes.
So.
Just a little more info about Shelby then. We cared, no.
TMI. But yeah, I think it's a very good ending to that episode.
Yeah, I think, well, the pilot was good, but this one kind of ramps things up quite a bit.
I like it. Really does. It really does. So speaking of, how do you rate it?
What do we do it out of 5?
Yep. And I think it should be 5 disco balls. Because I just can't get over it.
I gave it 4. This is a good one.
Yeah, I was thinking like 4, 4.25.
Yeah.
So I'll give it a 4.25. I really liked this episode.
Yeah, and boy, that scene with Norma and his mom that's not there, that's some creepy stuff.
Oh, you get that scene, so you see that Norman actually hallucinates.
Uh-huh.
Conversations.
You're leaving Norman in a scary scary predicament.
Scary predicament that he was just there to get the belt.
Right. He had no idea.
No idea that he was going to run across that girl. I mean, that he was just there to get the belt.
Yeah, I guess he was thinking maybe he'd put it behind the locked door.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was. Yeah. He wasn't there looking for the girl. Absolutely not. That wasn't even in his mind. And we also get like the Dylan and Norman kind of bonding a little bit, which I liked a lot. So I think it was a great episode.
Yeah, good episode.
Yep. So do you have a What the Bip moment?
I have two. I've been waffling. One is just the images of Miss Watson tied up. What the Bip was going on there?
Mm-hmm.
What's my other one? I guess I'll pick that one because I don't remember the other one. It was
my What the Bip was just when we realize in that scene with Norman and Norma that she's not there.
Yeah, maybe that was it.
That
because I remember my What the Bip was a more kind of a startled What the Bip.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, originally my What the Bip is those grandpa dunglies that Norman was wearing. But then I was like, eh, it's not a good What the Bip. So
good
then
feels.
I was like, yeah, my What the Bip is definitely, because that, even watching this episode, this will be, what, my third time now watching it. That scene still just gives me the creeps. And I think it's because it reminds me of something that happened to me personally.
Oh, your ghost?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the first scene in the show that makes you kind of like scared of your own environment now.
Yeah.
You kind of start looking around you. And
it's
the
pretty
creep.
Creepy.
Yeah.
Because I didn't see it coming. She was there. They didn't.
Right.
They didn't, like, make her fuzzy or something. There was no reason to not think she was there until the camera moves, and you're like, wait, why is he on his bed alone? You know? And then the camera moves back, and she's there, and you're like, okay, maybe I just saw that wrong.
Uh-huh.
And then the camera deliberately moves back again, and he's alone, and it's just like, what?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Creepy. Yeah. So, that's my What the Bip.
I still haven't come up with my other one. I should have written it down. I did not take one note.
Oh, you didn't?
Yeah, I thought. When I looked at him, I thought, uh-oh, I didn't take notes. I had my little paper already and my pen in my hand. But I was like, is this have nothing to take notes about? Or is it because I'm sick?
Probably because you're sick. Because this was a good episode.
It was a good episode. But I thought, well, even though I'm sick, I just barely watched it. So I should be okay without notes. And I was. And, of course, we have your notes.
Yeah.
But I usually write down my own little observations about things.
Oh, Buddy needs to go out. Can we take just a quick second break?
Yeah.
Okay, hang on. Okay, I'm back. Sorry.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So where were we? We did What the Bip.
I think that's it. We just...
What about spoilers? Do you have any spoilers?
I don't have any spoilers to discuss. Do you?
I didn't really think of any at all. I was trying to as I was watching it, and I was like, I just don't... Because I think we're kind of... I think the show's kind of moving along where things aren't spoilers anymore.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely stuff we don't know, but nothing that really happened in this episode that makes me want to discuss.
Right, same. So, okay, so no spoilers this time.
That's probably good, because we've gone fairly long.
Yeah, did we want to give out our email and stuff?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I did not write down who it is. We got a review in iTunes, and we were super excited. It was very nice, and so we want to thank you.
Casey,
thank you. Thanks,
yep, thanks
so much
for the review, and
we really appreciate it. We were really excited. We were really nerdy about it because that was our first feedback at all.
Yep. And it was a positive one, and we appreciate that very much, so thank you. But again, if anyone wants to email us any kind of feedback, we are at yesmotherpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, you can look us up on our Facebook page, which is just a Yes Mother Podcast. We're also on Twitter. That one's called Yes Mothercast.
Yeah, again, if you guys want to send us feedback, if you guys want to come up with your own what the bit moment, we will read them.
Right, and we do realize no one said anything because no one's really said anything. But we realize we really go through these episodes with a fine-tooth comb, but we're kind of our aim for this rewatch thing is that you could listen to this podcast if you've already seen the show and you can just listen to it and not feel like you have to watch it again. This could be like
your refresher, before season two starts. Cause
right.
Yeah. I don't think we'll probably not go through season two as.
No, I don't plan on it.
Yeah.
So we're kind of treating this as kind of, that's just something I would appreciate in a show that I'd seen maybe when it aired. And then I want to see season one and you might start thinking about, I mean, season two, and you might start thinking about maybe refreshing yourself on season one. And I would probably most likely go to a podcast for that and maybe do a rewatch. But if you, you know, you can eliminate the rewatch or you can watch it, but you know.
Yep.
This is kind of a rewatchy thing that we're doing for the first season only. So
right.
if we're going through it too slow, I don't know. Sorry. It's just what we decided to do. And since no one's saying anything, then we will continue.
Yep, exactly. So, all right, well, anything else you got to say, Em?
No, I'm going to go to bed.
Yeah, you sound pretty tired. So. Yeah.
But I'm glad we recorded tonight because I don't know what my voice is going to be like for the next few days.
Yeah, I'm glad that we were able to, too. So, okay. Well, I hope you feel better.
Thanks. I'm glad it's now instead of next week because we're going to go up to Wyoming and there's a lot of babies that are going to be up there and I should hopefully be better by then.
That's right.
That's like the first thing I thought of. I'm like, I don't want to be sequestered from Lucy. Harder.
Oh, she's so cute. I'm jealous that you're going out there.
Yeah, I'm excited.
I bet. Yeah. I still have to get all my...
We did Christmas last year, but that's the only time we've ever done it since I got married. Have Christmas with our family, and it was a lot of fun, but we usually try and go right after Christmas, because my father-in-law is divorced, and so if we left, you know,
he'd just be alone.
Yeah. So we never spend Christmas with my family ever since we got married, which is fine, and whatever, but
yeah,
it was fun to be with them last year, but I don't want to do it again. Maybe someday, but...
That's a lot of people for Christmas Day.
It is. Oh, man, you have no idea how long... Oh, you probably have some idea. And I took pictures of the presents.
I remember, didn't they go, like, into the kitchen?
But very much.
Oh, that's just it nuts.
It was obscene. It was a lot of fun, though. So, yeah, it took a long time to get through Christmas.
Yeah. No, like mine and Cam's Christmas. We go to his mom and dad's for Christmas Eve, and then Christmas Day is ours.
That's nice.
We do nothing. We've already watched the Lord of the Rings trilogy, so I guess we won't be doing that. We'll have to do something. Yep. So. All right. Well, go to bed. Get better.
All right.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
Okay. See you soon.
Bye.
Bye. We'll be right back. Or is it Herb Alpert who we were talking about last week? Herb?
Yes.
Is it Herb? I want to get this right.
Yeah, Herb Alpert. Why? Did he have like a million?
Yes. He admitted that he knew how to shoot a gun, but it looked like he had never, like, packed before.
Right.
Is that the right term?
I think so.
Packing, sure. Yeah. He had never gone packing. So he was like, gone packing, I bet that's not right.
He's never packed or concealed a gun before.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, I don't, but.
So one, he was feeling pretty cool, and two, he was, didn't know where to put it.
Right, right.
But he ended up putting it in kind of the normal, I don't know, the kind of a hitman.
I think against your back, like, kind of down your pants like that is probably fairly normal, I would think.
Yeah, except later the guy kind of called him on it.
True. True. It just seems weird to, like, put it down front in case it goes off by accident.
Right.
A little more to lose up front. Than right.
Then the buttocks. Shot directly in the buttocks. I would call that the vapors.
Oh my. Daddy, is that a shock?
Oh, funny.
Where's my fainting couch? Oh, this bucket of fish will do. Oh dear. Okay. So
I could sleep. I could sleep.